Scripture reading for this morning will be 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 15 through 18. But I have used none of these rights, and I have not written this to make it happen that way for me. For it would be better for me to die than for anyone to deprive me of my boast. For if I preach the gospel, I have no reason to boast, because an obligation is placed on me, and woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if unwillingly, I am entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? To preach the gospel and offer it free of charge and not make full use of my authority in the gospel.
Good morning. Before I dive in, may I say thank you to David for his comments on prayer. I like being at a congregation where from time to time the shepherds have something to say to us when the elders have a word to speak, and I appreciate that when they do. Thank you. This morning we're going to finish up our series on the topic of things being new, on a new view of the world that we live in given to us by the gospel and how it's changed everything. I hope what we may have learned in this section... That was a bad sentence. I hope what we may have learned. I hope what we actually learned in this section of 1 Corinthians is that when you have a problem, especially in the church, but anywhere in life, that you don't know exactly how to sort it out. It seems like there's values in conflict and that we can't get an answer to it. The problem is quite often the values that we're arguing about. It's that the whole conversation has been upside down because of how we've lived our lives in the past has carried over to the new life. And it turns out the life we lived in the past doesn't fit well with the gospel. That's why we were supposed to give it up. The gospel redefines everything. And so when we find ourselves in one of those problems where we say, I just don't see the way out of this one, sometimes we have to step back and say, am I even looking at this topic the way the gospel teaches me to look at this topic? Do I need a new perspective? We took a phrase from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 31, part B, for the present form of this world is passing away, which we understood to mean that the world as we have known it, not necessarily the matter we're looking at, though that'll go eventually too, but the world and its values, its rules and its cultures, what has made for our lives up to this moment is passing. Because Christ has come, because Christ has died, because Christ is risen from the dead, a new world and new values and new everything has come to pass that is shaping and now reshaping the lives of the people who believe in it. And that important concept of things being actually new carries over into this week's topic from 1 Corinthians chapter 9 that touches on an area so sensitive, especially to the American conscience. I don't know if I could even preach this sermon in other parts of the world and it be effective, because it is a value that we cherish so highly here and that I think they cherish so highly in Corinth that it only makes sense because of our unique set of problems almost. There is something we share in common with Corinth, and that is a value called freedom. Freedom is not a bad word. The New Testament uses the word freedom. Paul is going to use it in this passage. Freedom is a good thing if freedom is defined by the gospel. But too often, freedom is defined in opposition to the gospel, which gives us quite a bit of problem. In America, one of our fundamental values is freedom, that we cherish above everything else. Our Declaration of Independence was rooted in freedom. We wrote a constitution that was rooted in freedom. That wasn't enough, so we spelled out the first 10 amendments to give us what we call a Bill of Rights, an expression of freedom, to make sure everybody knew this is what's important. Freedom matters to us. Does freedom matter to us? I would gather it does, right? Give me liberty or give me death, right? That's the quote we were taught in grade school from old Patrick Henry, right? Freedom matters to us. And I'm glad of all the values we could have, freedom's a good one, unless it's defined poorly. Sometimes we define freedom as the freedom to do whatever I want. That sounds right on the surface. Isn't freedom the absence of a rule telling you what to do? The absence of a leash? The absence of restraint? I mean, it sounds right on the surface. And so in our political discussions or social discussions or moral discussions, whenever somebody sets a rule in place, somebody says, yeah, but what about freedom? Don't I have the freedom, the right to do as I please? Aren't you restraining my freedom with that rule or that value that you're setting up as a boundary for me? It's been an issue that I think has just inundated American culture. Probably the best expression of where we kind of get off track with freedom comes from one of my favorite authors, not C.S. Lewis this morning, how about that? Another author that is one of my favorites, and I'm almost embarrassed to admit that she's one of my favorite authors because she's wrong about everything. She's just a fantastic writer. She's a fantastic writer who perfectly expresses in her books everything we're wrong about, only she believes it's true. And I have, from an early age, a high school teacher assigned me my first Ayn Rand book and said, you need to read some Ayn Rand. And listen, and I loved it. I ate it up. I mean, it's good writing. It makes your blood boil. Freedom, I'm free to think and to do as I please. And then over time, that starts to sink in and you say, is that even true? Is she even right about that? Let me give you this quote that I think like perfectly encapsulates the way modern people in America view the world. At first, man was enslaved by the gods, but he broke their chains. Then he was enslaved by the kings, but he broke their chains. He was enslaved by his birth, by his kin, by his race, but he broke their chains. He declared to all his brothers that a man has rights which neither God nor king nor other men can take away from him, no matter what their number, for this is the right of man, and there is no right on earth above this right. And he stood on the threshold of the freedom for which the blood of the centuries behind him had been spilled. My blood just starts flowing. I'm like, oh, this is great stuff. I want to start a rally and wave some flags. I mean, this is powerful writing. But it expresses, if you listen carefully, maybe the fundamental flaw of the way we view our culture and human life. Used to, we were slaves to things like religion, to higher powers. And now we have democracy and intelligence and science, and now we're free from that dark age to do as man sees fit. And that's the highest right. That sounds so good on the surface. And you can hear that in every conversation we have in politics. Whether something should be legalized or not. Whether marriage should be defined a certain way or not. Whether you have a privacy to do certain things in your home or not, whether this is good for the common good or not. Like every conversation we have in public life gets back to this question, well, aren't we free? Aren't we free to do as we please? Don't I have rights? And I want to suggest to you that that is the old definition of freedom, not a new one. It's a definition of freedom as old as Corinth and older than that. Remember what the Corinthians said in chapter 6? They say to Paul, all things are lawful for me. I can do what I want, Paul. Don't give me restrictions. Don't give me rules. Don't tell me what's allowed and what's not allowed. Paul says, yeah, maybe it's legal. It doesn't make it a good idea. It certainly doesn't make it good. Listen now to his discussion that he has in chapter 9, beginning in verse 12. Actually, it doesn't begin in verse 12. We're just going to pick up in verse 12 because I had to start somewhere. And he's been discussing his rights as an apostle. Paul, what are you allowed to do and what are you allowed to expect? And he says this, kind of summing up what he's been saying down in verse 12. If others share this rightful claim on you, do we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. In the context that I don't have time for, sorry, go read the first 11 verses. He's been discussing the rights of an apostle and what he's allowed to do. And to make his point, he says, you have some rights, don't you? And if you have those rights, you know the apostles have those rights. There are things that apostles are permitted to do, that every human being, every member of the church is permitted to do. This follows after chapter 8's discussion of food offered to idols. Well, don't I have a right? And it leads into this discussion of what are we allowed to do? What are we not allowed to do? Paul says, do we have this right? Sure, we have this right. But then he makes this crazy claim, I didn't use my right. Listen to that again, the end of that. Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right. There are some things that we might be allowed to do that we decide we're not going to do. Well, now, wait a second. What a waste. What a waste to have a right and not use it. Paul says, that's not the way I view freedom. That's not the way I view rights. Having freedom, having rights, isn't about doing everything you can get away with. The gospel has given freedom a new meaning. Skip down a bit into verse 15 and hear him say it this way. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I willing, writing these things, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. He says, I'm not writing this letter to tell you what we are allowed to do. I'm not writing this letter to tell you how much freedom you have so that you can do whatever you want. I'm not writing this letter so that I can prove to you my rights as an apostle so I can do what I want. In fact, and did you catch that last bit? If you were listening earlier to my Patrick Henry quote, give me liberty or give me death, listen to Paul say it almost in reverse. I'd rather die than exercise that right. How backwards is that from the way we see it? I'd rather die than give up the grounds of my boasting, which is a kind of funny expression that Paul uses, right? That there's one thing I'm doing well in life. There's one thing I've got right. And that is, I have determined to live according to the gospel and to give up some of the things that I could have had. I have decided not to exercise all of my rights, and I'm pretty proud of that decision. There's one thing I've gotten right, and I'd rather die than give that up now. What a mistake that would be, he says. Is this a different view of freedom and rights than we're used to? This isn't a person who's interested in finding the most freedom he can have and the furthest extents of his rights and saying, I've got to do all those things I'm allowed to do. What rule is he living by? What could be of higher concern than rights and privileges that he has? He's going to tell you. And a couple of words stick out. The first word, he says, is there's a thing called necessity. In verse 16, he says it like this. If I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. For necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. Fun minute, moments in Ben Williams trivia. The first memory verse I can ever remember as a kid was Dad giving me 1 Corinthians 9:16, just the last half. Woe unto me if I preach not the gospel. I mean, what was I supposed to do with my life if that was my first memory verse? He was setting me up, right? Woe to me if I preach not the gospel. Oddly enough, his take on that was different than you might think. Dad interprets that verse this way. He takes it to mean, you should not preach the gospel unless you feel like this. If he would follow that up by saying, if there's anything else you can do, go do it. But if you have a moral obligation, if conscience chases you down every time you try not to preach, then be a preacher. But if you feel like Paul, be a preacher. But if you can do anything else, go do it. Old preacher telling me that as a young man, I thought, what am I getting into? He said, yeah, if you can do anything else, go do it. But if necessity is laid upon you, then be a preacher. And I remember that, and I always will. But what's Paul's point about the word necessity here? Why does he give up his rights? He says, because something was laid on me. He calls it necessity. It sounds like a burden, doesn't it? A duty? Duty doesn't sound like freedom. That doesn't sound like he's free to do whatever he wants. It seems like somebody grabbed him by the neck and made him do something. And that's pretty close, Read the story of Acts. I'm not going to say that God took away Paul's free will, but it got really close, right? He's on the road going down to Damascus to put Christians to death, and God interrupts him and strikes him blind. This isn't Paul waking up one day and saying, you know what'd be great? I think I need to believe in the Messiah and preach his gospel. This is God reaching down from heaven and grabbing him and saying, guess what you're going to do with your life? Necessity was laid upon me. And by the way, if you read the Old Testament, that is consistently how spokesmen for God describe their life. Read the first couple of verses of every prophetic book, and they start out like this: the burden of the Lord as it came to Micah the prophet. They didn't think of it as a privilege. Look at this great freedom I have. They say the God of heaven dropped something in my lap, and now I have necessity. I have duty. I have obligation. It's a different view of freedom, for sure. There's a thing called necessity. Paul considers his preaching of the gospel a necessity. And it has so fully consumed his life that he would be lost without it. Woe to me if I don't do it. The gospel is of such great importance that it has superseded my own will to do with my life as I want. It has superseded my own plans. What are your plans? You all have plans. You all have a story. Well, I'm going to work at this job, and I'm going to do a certain thing. I'm going to make certain money. I'm going to live in a certain house. I'm going to go to certain places. I'm going to do certain things with my family. You have a plan. It may be very rigid. It may be very flexible, but everybody has a plan. Folks, on the road to Damascus, Paul had a plan. And it wasn't just going to Damascus. It was a whole life ahead of him. He intended to live. And he has said, woe to me if I don't do this now. His plan and his freedom to decide, his destiny, he abandoned on that road and says, I will follow this Christ wherever he points. Freedom meant something different to Paul. He believed in necessity. He believed in duty. He believed in obligation from on high, more even than the freedom that he might have as a human being to do what he thought was best. Necessity is laid upon me. Look at verse 17 and 18. He's going to use a different word, this time stewardship, but he makes a similar point. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. Strange little passage there, but sort it out. Paul says, I suppose I could have done it of my own free will. Again, like we described a moment ago, Paul could have woken up one morning and said, you know, this Jesus seems like a pretty good person. I'd like to know more about him and go preach his gospel. But Paul admits that's not the way it happened. If it had happened that way, maybe he would have deserved a reward. Maybe he could say to God, you know, God, I picked this path. And maybe God would have said to him, boy, we're so glad we got you, Paul. Now, does that sound likely to happen? No, it doesn't. But that's Paul being facetious here. If I had picked this out, if I had gone to God to say, hey, I've got a deal for you. I'm going to give you my life of service. Do with it as you will. What do you pay me? Then maybe he gets a reward. Paul says, that's not how it happened. Paul says, that's not ever how it happens. Instead, God reaches down from on high and lowers on us duty, morality, obligation, conscience. And he speaks and we respond. And he says, I don't get to go asking for a reward for that because it wasn't because of my own goodness that I decided to go do this. God had to get my attention. I wasn't being very good. And now the reward I get is not because I go and barter with God and say, now what do you owe me for all this good work I've done? He says, my reward is getting to give up my freedom to teach the gospel. Again, does that not sound completely backwards? What is a reward supposed to look like? A reward is supposed to be a freedom. Every kid understands this, right? If you do this, if you clean your room, I'll let you go do this, right? You do what you're supposed to do, I give you a privilege. I give you some freedom. I give you some rights. Paul says, you wouldn't believe it. Guess what my reward is? I get to give up my rights. Is his view of freedom just upside down from ours? He says, the greatest privilege I have left in my life is the privilege of saying, no, I don't have to live my life the way I want to. I can live my life for the cause of the gospel. I can live as a steward. Now, what is a steward? We don't have enough stewards to talk about it. But a steward in the ancient world, as Paul says, has been entrusted with something. The steward is a manager of the property of the owner. But the steward himself owns nothing. The steward himself has nothing. He can write a check for $1 million, but it's not his $1 million and it's not his check, right? That he is simply overseeing the possessions of someone else. He himself has no rights except to exercise the will of the master. Paul says, I have been entrusted with a stewardship. Oh, you mean he gave you lots of money? No, the opposite. I have nothing. What a great privilege it is, he says, to be a steward, entrusted by God with his gospel. Again, we're starting to wonder, has Paul lost his mind? Does he not understand how this works? He's going to go a little deeper. Keep reading now in verse 19. For though I am free from all, well, finally, Paul gets, oh, Paul, you're free. Of course now you are. Now listen to what he says. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I may win more of them. Paul has freely given up his freedom. Based on the moral obligation laid on him by heaven, he made a choice that what he wants in this life is not the most important thing in his life. That what he's allowed to have is not as important as what he could accomplish for God if he gave it up. He says, that was my freedom. This is the story of freedom that we're not told. We are told that freedom means doing whatever you want. That's not what freedom is. Freedom is the freedom to do something. Freedom is the freedom to do something worthwhile. God has given you the freedom not to waste your life. And what do we do with it? We waste our life with it. We think the ultimate exercise of freedom is doing whatever we want and utterly and completely wasting our life on personal desires and whims. And God says, what a waste of freedom. The freedom that Paul sees is the freedom to become a servant. The freedom to do something with your life that has meaning in the great cause of God's kingdom, that has value. He says, that's freedom. I chose with my freedom to be the servant of all, the slave of all, that I may win some. By the way, what's win some? Not win some from himself. He's not building a personality cult and he's going to score so many points when he gets enough followers he gets to start his own church. That's not how it works. He's winning them, not even for himself. I get to be a servant of all to win some of all for the God of all. There's no me in any of this. And you say, Paul, that's a little bit extreme. How can you view servitude in the gospel to be of greater worth than your own personal freedom? Surely he doesn't really mean that. And then he explains it, and we wish he hadn't. Because as long as it's abstract, we can say, yeah, I guess I give up a freedom once in a while. But Paul says, no, I don't think you understand the depth of my meaning. Let me illustrate my point. And he gives us one of the most strange and confusing passages in 1 Corinthians in verses 20 through 22. To the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not my being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside of the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. Now, if that was a confusing bunch of sentences, there's a reason for that. It's something that you recognize immediately if you're a preacher. I was discussing this passage with a preacher friend of mine, and we all just immediately know exactly what Paul's doing here. This is a thing called disclaimer. When you're speaking to an audience and you're fairly certain someone's going to misunderstand you, you have to give disclaimers. Ben, do you like fruit? Yeah, I like fruit. Well, okay, let me clarify. When I say I like fruit, I'm not necessarily including cantaloupe. Well, okay, I like cantaloupe, but I like the sweet ones. You know, some of them are kind of tart. Maybe they're green and not quite ripe. I'm not sure I like those. But yeah, I like fruit. Now, was that a complicated sentence? Yeah, I didn't have to say all that. But because I was afraid you'd misunderstand me, I added a bunch of information you didn't need when I could have just said, yeah, I like fruit. And that's kind of what happens here when Paul says, not under the law. Well, he had just told them back in chapter 6, they had said, you know, all things are lawful to me. And Paul says, no, not like that. Right? When I say I'm not under the law, I don't mean that I can do anything I want. That's the opposite of what I'm saying. I mean, not under the law of Moses, but I am always under the law of Christ. And so those parenthetical statements in this passage are disclaimers where Paul's trying to explain to a group of people who were anxious to misunderstand him what he meant. But if you'll kind of set those aside for a minute and just read through it, you get the gist of what he's saying. To the Jew, I became as a Jew. Is there a requirement that Paul follow Jewish custom? Paul has fervently advocated the opposite of that. Read the book of Galatians, for example, where he says, that's just not the case. I'm under no obligation in Christ to follow Jewish custom. He said, but you know what? I did sometimes. When I'm around Jewish people, I follow Jewish customs. When I'm around Jewish people, I keep the Sabbath. When I'm around Jewish people, I eat kosher law. I do the things I'm supposed to do when I'm with them because it helps. When I'm around people under that law, I follow that law. To the extent that in one strange passage in the book of Acts, Paul even takes a vow, a Jewish vow, and goes into the temple in order to kind of win some points with the Jewish people so they would trust him and see him not as an outsider, but as one of their own. He says, yeah, to the Jews, to the people under the law, I became under the law. To people not under the law, I became as one not under the law. Paul worked with a lot of Gentiles. They didn't follow the Jewish customs. And when he was around them, he didn't always follow the Jewish customs. He had two disciples, two young men who worked with him, Timothy and Titus. One of them he commanded to be circumcised like the Jews, and one he said, don't. One time it made sense and one time it didn't. He says, I want us to be whatever we have to be to work with the people we're working with. To the weak, I'd become weak. Listen, nobody is stronger in the faith than the Apostle Paul. But he could, can I use the word condescend without you thinking it's condescending? I don't mean condescend in the sense of looking down at them. I mean of actually lowering himself. He could actually lower himself and sympathize with people with whom he did not agree in order to accomplish the work of the gospel. And we saw that in chapter 8, where he condescends by way of agreement to the people who wouldn't eat the meat. Paul doesn't have a problem eating meat, but he says, I won't eat meat as long as the world stands rather than make my brother fall. I can be weak for the sake of the weak. And then he sums it all up, I became all things to all people. Do you see how obnoxious that phrase is to the American ear? I became all things to all people. What is our value? Freedom. I have the freedom to be me. I'm supposed to find who I really am and go and be that person because I live in a free society and I have rights. I'm supposed to be me. That's the greatest of all American freedoms, we're told. The freedom to be what I think I am. Paul says, let me tell you the freedom I have in Christ. I can be whoever I need to be if it gets the gospel out. I have the freedom to be somebody I'm not. Now, he's not saying lying. He's not saying dissension or dissimulation. He's not saying hypocrisy. He says, but what I'm allowed to do isn't the most important thing to me. What matters more is what I'm able to do for the cause of the gospel. And that is such a hard pill to swallow for a people who love freedom. Paul says, I have a new freedom. It is the freedom to serve Christ at any cost. To make my life matter because his life matter. And so he ends with this beautiful little phrase in the next verse. I do it. I do it for all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Paul, the wisest of men, brilliant writer, incredible debater, master student of the gospel, says, my freedom allows me to partake in the gospel that you get. I get to share in your blessings. That's my freedom. To give up the rights and privileges and rank that some people would think were the meaning of life, to be a servant of Christ, I do it all for the sake of the gospel. This is a hard pill to swallow, but I want you to think carefully about your plan and your freedom. We live in a country of enormous freedom, and it is a great blessing, where you are allowed to make any number of choices, to take any number of paths. You want to be a farmer, be a farmer. You want to be a dentist, be a dentist. You want to save your money, save your money. You want to spend your money, spend your money. Nobody tells you what to do. We all got a little bit of a libertarian in us. We all believe in that freedom in this country, and it's kind of great. But never mistake that for the freedom of the gospel. The freedom that has freed us from the consequence of sin and death and allows us to be truly the servants of God. The freedom to say, I can put what God wants first because what I want isn't that good anyway. The freedom to be something better because of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ than I could ever have been on my own. There is a freedom there that is hard to understand. And I think that's why Paul spends so many words trying to explain it. But to Corinth, who lived every day thinking, we need to do whatever we can to enjoy life and be free, he says there is a greater freedom. It is the freedom of the gospel of Christ. Submit yourself to that freedom and find in him a liberty that you have never known before. In faith, find the freedom from sin and a beginning of life with restraints, with limitations, with self-sacrifice and meaning and worth and blessings that exist nowhere else. If you've not tasted of that freedom, do it today as we stand and sing a word of encouragement. Won't you come?